From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in the fall of 2011. University of Connecticut professor Norman Garrick went to live in Zurich, Switzerland, which is home to one of the most respected transit systems in the world. Garrick was excited to see how it was up close. After all, he's a professor of civil engineering, a member of the National Board of the Congress for New Urbanism, and he works on a transportation task force. He is an expert in the field, you would say. Would Zurich meet the hype? Garrick went to live in a sleepy bedroom community outside the big city, but found that there were all kinds of transportation options even there. After a few weeks, he realized something. If anyone was driving into campus where he worked, he hadn't seen them. Think about that. He hadn't noticed anyone driving to work. They were served by the multifaceted transit system in plenty of other ways. And now think about Rochester. Think about Geneva, New York. Think about the town where you live in. Do you know anyone who doesn't drive to work? The Community Design Center of Rochester has invited Garrick to deliver the final presentation in their annual series, Reshaping Rochester. He's going to be here for that. And in fact, that's June 3rd coming up next week from the 7 to 9 p.m., I should say. June 3rd, 7 to 9 p.m. at Gleason Works Auditorium. Tickets still available for that event. But first, Norman Garrick is a guest of mine for the Hour on Connections. Norman, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Evan. Thank you for that great introduction.
Well, sure. We're going to talk about that more in a moment. Let me also introduce our panel that is in studio here. Jim McIntosh is here, Rochester City Engineer. Jim, nice to see you again.
Nice to see you. Welcome, Norm.
Very good. And Howard Decker is here. Howard is a fellow in the American Institute of Architects and a board member for the Community Design Center of Rochester. Howard, nice to have you back.
Evan, it's great to be here. Greetings, Norm.
This is our way of everyone is saying hello to Norm from afar. He's going to be here next week. Mike Governale is here, the president of Reconnect Rochester. Mike, thanks for being here.
Norm.
See,
how are you?
You just wanted to say Norm.
Cheers.
And Crystal Benjamin Baffert's here, the director of service planning for RTS. Crystal, nice to see you.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Norman Garrick again. That story of being in a sort of a living in a bedroom community, then going to the city to work and not even seeing anyone driving to work, it really is not possible to imagine that here right now. Throughout the course of this hour, we're going to talk about whether it's realistic to think about how that changes. But I want to go back for a second here, if we could. I want to go back to what they called the historic compromise that changed everything in Zurich. My understanding was this agreement in Zurich was made in 1996. What was the historic compromise, Professor?
Well, the historic compromise was about parking, and parking is the bugaboo of a lot of cities, especially in upstate New York. In Connecticut, we have so much parking that one would be mistaken in thinking that's all we do in those cities is to provide parking. What they did in Zurich was the idea that they had enough parking and they wanted to turn some of the surface lots into places for people and also on-street parking. So what they agreed to do was that they would not provide any more parking, and that if parking was going to be built, then each parking space would replace an existing parking spot. So over time, what that did was a lot of the spaces on the surface, such as on the streets, etc., were turned over to cafes, to sitting places for people, etc. So you go to Zurich now, and there's hardly any surface parking left.
This is, for those of us who think about the future of transportation and whether it really is multimodal, multifaceted, this is a revolutionary step because we have become so locked into the automobile, to the grid system, to big surface parking lots. We certainly see them here in Rochester and throughout Western New York. That, Norman, I want you to help explain for us, to us and our audience, when Zurich makes this decision, you have to come up with an alternative, or was it a gradual change? Because if you're going to put a cap on parking, and they did that, do you immediately start to move to other forms? You know, how do those dominoes start to fall?
Well, actually, the parking compromise built on what was referred to as the People's Revolution, which was a move in the 70s. In the 70s, the public activist and general public using the word. They staged a revolution against the city government. The city government had planned to expand highways into the city, and also they were planning to build subways. They were planning to take the surface trains and put them underground into subways, and the people voted down that plan, and they came up with their own alternative plan to actually expand the transit system. And so it was that as the foundations for what led to the historic compromise about parking 20 years later.
And for those who are wondering, well, is this what the people really wanted? My understanding is in 2010, there was a referendum and 55% approved these rather strict parking caps, essentially cementing this plan for the long term. Is that right?
That is correct, yes. I think it's gotten more and more popular as people have seen the impact on the city.
Okay, and so you've been there, you lived there, and that we opened the hour here with the story of you being there in the fall of 2011. That is taken from some of the articles you've written about not only what Xerox is doing, but your time there. So what was it like living in a place like that, Norman?
Well, you know, it was hard to come back to Storrs, Connecticut, because I had to relearn how to engage with the automobile culture. I had to relearn driving, you know, depending on my car. And I really, it was not an easy transition back. I really enjoyed the freedom of not having a car, which is kind of ironic because we always associate having a car with freedom.
We're talking to Norman Garrick, University of Connecticut Professor of Civil Engineering, who is going to be here in Rochester next week for the final presentation in the Reshaping Rochester series presented by the Community Design Center of Rochester. If you call the Community Design Center of Rochester, you can still get tickets for the presentation called Transit Revolution next week. It's June 3rd from 7 to 9 p.m. at Gleason Works Auditorium. And Norman, I think it now bears asking then, if this is really applicable, so much of the work that you do is not just looking at where it's been successful, but trying to figure out how can we see modern cities transform in similar ways. There is a lot of pessimism about making these kinds of transformations at the kind of scale that would be required, whether it's Rochester or where you are in Connecticut or elsewhere. So start to take us through this. What is realistic?
Well, I think what I'm trying to do with my work and my presentation is the understanding that firstly, I think the understanding is there. A lot of places are coming to the realization that you cannot build a city like Rochester on car transportation alone, that the main operating system of cities that are like Rochester is transit, is walking, is biking. I think there are lots of places around the country now where that is the accepted understanding. The problem is that we seem to be taking a lot of money and implementing transit projects and in a very, very bad way. What I would like is this sense that we need, if we're going to be trying to change our cities operate, we need to learn from the places that have done this and have done this well. We can't just keep stumbling in the dark as we've been doing in a lot of places, including here in Hartford, Connecticut.
I want to talk about some of the impact of the kind of decision that Zurich made compared to the United States. We like to put things in context, and some of what Norman Garrick has done is compiled some data. So let me go ahead and read some of this data to help us understand just how different it is in the United States versus a place like Zurich. For an example, the default parking level for small shops in Zurich translates to 0.75 parking spaces per 1,000 square feet of floor space. So 3/4 of one parking space for every 1,000 square feet of floor space, small shops in Zurich. To put it in perspective, the minimum requirement for parking in American cities is rarely less than 3 spaces per 1,000 square feet and is often as high as 5 spaces per 1,000 square feet. So the minimum requirement in the United States is essentially 4 times the amount of parking that we see in Zurich, and sometimes 6 to 7 times the amount of parking there. And so that's just one example of the difference in sort of parking density. Then you have studied, Norman, the question of whether there's kind of a correlation between jobs and population density and parking spaces. And what have you found?
Well, one of the studies we have looked at is to, we have examined cities around the countries, and we have actually gone in and measured in a very laborious way from aerial photographs. We measured the amount of parking in these cities in the 1960s and the current amount of parking. And what we're finding is that the cities that increased their parking the most are the ones that also lost the most jobs, most residents, and also the more retail facilities downtown. So there seems to be a correlation. As they always say, correlation is not causation, but
sure.
You know, this keeps happening over and over and over. We see it in lots of places. Well, the worst, actually, in our study, we did not look at Rochester, but we did look at Albany. And Albany had less parking than almost anybody else at the start of the 1950s. And now they are one of the most parking-ridden cities in the country.
Even the biggest developments in Zurich have adhered to this policy. We understand, for example, the Prime Tower complex. That's in Zurich. It includes the tallest building in Switzerland, 36 stories high, and three other smaller buildings there in this complex. Even with the largest building in Switzerland in this sort of this large complex, a total of 250 parking spots for that entire complex. And in the United States, the requirement would be 8 times that number. Is that right?
That's correct.
So you're just seeing, I guess they've really adhered to it. So before I direct the conversation to our panel in studio, again, Norma, just kind of paint more the picture for our listeners who are hearing this saying, well, you know, okay, but they made a decision a couple of decades ago to cap parking. You have to find alternative ways. But are their alternative ways efficient? So often I talk to people who say, well, even if I take a bus, I've got to walk to get to the bus or bike to get to the bus or find a way to get there or down to a train station, et cetera. How efficient is the transit system in Zurich?
It's amazingly efficient. It's there's a great book called Human Transit, written by Jared Walker. He's a transit planner on the West Coast. And he talks about how do you define freedom in terms of transit? And he says a transit system gives you freedom if it allows you to change your plan at will. And that's the case in Zurich. In the afternoon, I would be at work. I could decide whether I wanted to go out to dinner. I could go anywhere in the city, and I could just do it instantaneously because the system was so well connected, it was so frequent that it was just the most amazing way of getting around the city.
Norman Garrick is my guest for the hour, University of Connecticut professor of civil engineering and an expert on transportation issues like the one we're discussing this hour. His presentation next week is called Transit Revolution, June 3rd, 7 to 9 p.m. at Gleason Works Auditorium, the final presentation in this season's series of Reshaping Rochester, put on by the Community Design Center of Rochester. And if you jump on the Community Design Center of Rochester's website or give them a call, you can still get tickets to the event. And Howard Decker is a board member. Some of what you're hearing so far, you hear him describe American cities, Hartford, some others that look like all they do is cater to parking lots. I saw you smiling and nodding for a moment there, Howard.
Absolutely. Rochester has just won thanks to Mike Governale, has just won the award this year for the most bombed out downtown as a result of surface parking. So we certainly in Rochester know what an overabundance of surface parking looks like, and we know very well what it does to our downtown. So in Rochester, what we have is we have a very short commute. We don't have much traffic, not much in the way of traffic jams.
Almost never, yeah.
And there's very little disincentive in the short term for people to start to think about transit alternatives. But in fact, the cost of this convenience is something that we're really starting to get in touch with, and nobody knows that better than Jim McIntosh on my right here, we're filling in the inner loop because we've discovered it costs more to maintain it than it does to keep it. And so this convenience that we're looking at, enjoying so much of being in our car all the time, has a huge cost. We have gigantic property taxes, and we are constantly spending on infrastructure for the car that has a very large economic implications. If we started to think in those terms, we might be able to see a way to liberate some of that money to create other transit types that would give us a little bit more choice, a little bit more convenience, and a little bit less reliance on the car.
Now, part of my job is to not be cynical, but to be a skeptic here. And so as much as what we hear about from Norman's experience looking at Zurich and some of the successful cities around the world with multimodal transportation is impressive, but you're moving a big rock uphill, Howard, to make that change. I think it would probably take political will. It would take remarkable amounts of planning, I think. Or Jim McIntosh, what would it take to even start that process of changing?
Well, I guess just to follow on what Howard and Norman were saying, we really are spending a lot of that money. You know, $25 million a year is roughly our budget for all of city projects. I haven't done the math, but I bet the number is probably in the $10 million range of what we're spending, both upkeeping our existing garage facilities and, you know, the transit system that we have. And so redirecting that, you know, money into some of these, you know, some other, you know, projects. Yes, it seems like it's a huge number to put a transit system in. You want to connect Main Street to the U of R or something. You know, it's, you know, the numbers $30, $40, $50 million come up. But, you know, would that, you know, make a significant difference? And as Howard said, some of the reasons people aren't, you know, in a hurry to do it is because we've made it so easy to get in and out of town and all of those kind of things. But we are spending, you know, there is a huge cost for this. Every time we look at developing a parcel, people say, well, we're going to lose this parking, you know, the housing along Plymouth Avenue. It's like, well, what are we going to do about the parking that we're going to replace? And we're developing some buildings downtown, and every developer wants to know, well, you know, you got to provide me parking. And they want us to build more, you know, parking facilities. And I think the answer is, to come up with, and people are looking for this, walkable communities, the cycling groups that want to be able to, you know, not have two cars, have one car and get everywhere else on their bike or on, you know, RTS transit. The opportunities, even though they are there, aren't being used as much as we'd like to, you know, see them be used.
Am I wrong in thinking that, because I've been there in a situation where I'm driving somewhere in Rochester and I think, how am I not finding parking? Everywhere I look, I feel like there's surface lots. But it feels like it's become a shell game, where one decade there will be some sort of a need for, a ostensible need for how many other hundreds of surface parking spaces in an area. And then sort of there's the ebbs and flows of economy and development, et cetera, and that area is not in demand anymore, and something else is propping up, and then you've got these big empty lots, nothing happening, nobody really knows what to do with it. And so am I wrong in thinking the city has a lot of parking? It's not exactly where people are always going now, which is even more of an annoyance for people, that there's empty lots, and then there's not enough where people think there needs to be.
That's true, and part of what Kate Washington and Neighborhood and Business Development is trying to do with that, and our parking advisory group is to start talking about ways to use that peripheral parking and parking outside, you know, the inner loop, with some method to get people, in and out of the city without using all that downtown parking, because we're not going to build parking as our way to, you know, to make this all work.
Howard?
Well, I think Jim raises a really interesting point. We have an enormous amount of parking downtown. We all know that. And if we had a downtown parking management plan linked to some sort of a circulator system, we could actually move people around downtown either on foot or by using a circulator, and the spots would begin to make sense.
I have to ask you, just for a definition of circulator, because the last time this came up in this program, we had that question from a number of listeners.
A circulator could be a lot of different things. In Ottawa, Canada, it's a tiny little hybrid bus. In lots of cities, it could be a streetcar, it could be a small bus, it could be a van, it could be a lot of different things. What it means is that it's connecting people to parking opportunities. Think about this. It's time for the Jazz Fest, and we want people to be able to park on the west side to get to the east side to the Jazz Festival. But they don't want to do that because they want to park near where the Jazz Fest is. So all of the parking on the west side is empty, and there's not enough spaces on the east side. If we had a circulator running around the city and taking people from parking opportunity to parking opportunity, then suddenly all of these tens of thousands of parking spaces we have downtown would make sense.
Is RTS part of that kind of a solution with a circulator?
We definitely are part of that conversation. The city completed a study in 2011, I think it was.
Yes.
And we've recently been reviewing the study to see what the opportunities are. Again, now that we have the transit center open, it could definitely be a key piece to a circulator connecting parking and the automobile and transit in the city. I think that's an important connection to make. Those three, the automobile and transit, has to work together here.
Mike Governale from Reconnect Rochester. You heard Howard mention that. I know you really were a big booster for Rochester to get that award for the parking award.
Absolutely. I don't want to take credit for the award. I was one of the people who helped submit Rochester for that award because parking is, like you said, everywhere you look. But those changes were, you know, sort of done generations before I got to Rochester. So what we were really trying to do is draw people's attention to that issue. And I think it's great that we're having this conversation today and talking about the possibilities for new systems like a circulator. If we're talking about a circulator, I would want to stress that it's something that it's a tool that can be used to help people get around our city on foot, not just to connect parking facilities, but I think the long-term goal here is to help people get around, walk our streets, and bring life back to our city streets and neighborhoods.
Let me grab our first phone call, and I should mention, if you want to join the conversation with our panel this hour, as we talk about a possible transit revolution in Rochester, it's 844-295-TALK, toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. This is Don in Rochester. Go ahead, Don.
Good afternoon. I apologize for the noise first off because I'm driving, but I wanted to call in to give you a different perspective because I bought a building a few years ago. Looking around downtown, the rent that I was needing, you know, the square footage that I was needing, the rent that I was paying, it made sense for me to build buy an existing building. I'm a big fan of, you know, reusing. There's some beautiful historic buildings downtown. I bought a piano factory off of Cascade Drive that, you know, was standing when Abraham Lincoln came through on the whistle stop, you know, train. So, you know, I'm a huge believer in preserving downtown, but it's great, you know, for you guys to sit in the planning office and say how we need to build a walkable downtown, but I spent $1 million of my own money, and I cannot lease this building because I have zero parking. And I know that Jim knows who I am. I've been in to speak with him. We talked about developing some parking in the former subway tunnel, which, you know, I maybe could access if, you know, the New York State DOT gods smile upon me. But, you know, my point is it's fine to talk about developing a walkable downtown, but the reality is you're trying to force a societal change that probably is not going to be, you know, ready to be changed. I mean, Europe is a completely different economy, completely different, you know, the cities were built first for walking. Rochester was not built first for walking. Rochester was built for use by vehicles. You know, that's why there was an underground parking garage that the city closed down underneath Midtown Mall years and years ago because they didn't want to maintain it. And I would say, you know, if there's any sort of pattern here, it's a pattern by the city of Rochester to refuse to maintain things, you know, great innovative things that they built.
All right, Don, hold on one second now because I want you to stay on the line. You've given us a lot of different prongs here, and there was one remark in particular that you made that seems to be provoking a reaction from some of the panel. I want to start with Howard Decker. Howard, you were reacting to when Don just said Rochester was built essentially for automobile transportation.
No, it wasn't actually. And if you go back and look at historically at this city, what you'll see is a city that was incredibly beautiful, very dense, and it had streetcars, and it had interurbans, and it had bikes, it had jitneys, it had buses, it had all different modes of transit. And it was a transit-rich but also an urbanistically rich environment. It was an incredibly beautiful city, and it was messy, of course, and it had all the problems, but it was a very rich environment. It really wasn't until the late 20s when we began to kind of give the city back over to the car. At that time, there was a study because car ownership in 8 years between 1920 and 1928 doubled. So in 1928, there were 90,000 cars in Rochester, New York, and everybody was terribly troubled by this because there was traffic. And a plan was created, which ultimately ended up in the inner loop. But it was really not Rochester. It's not Rochester's roots in cars. Rochester's roots are in walkable, transit-rich urbanism. That whole notion of Rochester as a car city didn't come for many decades. And finally, of course, by the 50s, we'd pretty much given up everything in favor of the car. Our subway was gone, our streetcars were gone, and we'd given everything up to the car. But that's a much later idea.
Okay, Don, go ahead.
Well, I guess I just wanted to also make the point that, you know, Europe in particular, you know, the mass transit system is built primarily for need. You know, the European economy is much different, and people's disposable incomes are much, much lower than they are here in the United States. Although, you know, median incomes and average incomes are similar, the tax rates are higher, the priorities for spending are much, much different. People in Europe couldn't afford a car like people in America can. You know, it's not just that it's a necessity or it's considered to be a necessity. It really is a necessity in Europe because otherwise, you know, people would be riding bicycles. So, you know, you have that birth of mass transit out of, you know, necessity is the mother of invention. Unfortunately, in America, you know, we have plenty of space, and so the cities, by and large, maybe not Rochester historically, but, you know, if you move up further out west, you'll see these great expansive cities that were built, you know, with the idea that, you know, there's plenty of space for parking and whatever. I mean, don't get me wrong. I would love nothing more than Rochester to be transferred overnight to a walkable community so I could have tenants in my building.
Sure.
It's, you know, it's costing me a fortune. But I think that a lot of cities, I mean, when I drive through the outskirts, especially the south towns of Buffalo, and I'm driving through all the traffic circles, they're beautiful. They're, you know, yes, they're still functional. There sure is a pain to get from point A to point B, and it doesn't mean people drive less. It just means that people get angry more when they drive through traffic circles. And
right.
I see this as a traffic circle. You know, in Massachusetts, they started tearing out the traffic circles because there were so many accidents.
Okay.
And here in New York State, you know, we're installing them. This is this, along the same thought in my mind.
Yeah, Don, I want to first of all, thank you for the phone call, giving us a lot to think about. And I don't think it sounds at all like you're against the notion of what some of the panel's discussing. I think you're trying to take the viewpoint from a property owner or a business owner that says, can this work? And you're seeing real obstacles. But let me bring Norman Garrick back into the conversation, University of Connecticut professor of civil engineering and a transportation expert who's going to be speaking in Rochester at the Reshaping Rochester series next week on June 3rd from 7 to 9 p.m. at Gleason Works Auditorium. If you missed the earlier part of the conversation, Norman is going to be talking about the success of Zurich. He lived in Zurich for some time. Norman, first of all, you heard Don say it's a necessity in Europe because a lot of Europeans couldn't afford to own cars. Is that accurate? I actually don't know the answer. I comparatively, American disposable income versus European. But what do you make of that, Norman?
I think there are so many misnomers in Don's statement. I think there are a lot of what drives transportation policy in the U.S. is misunderstandings and misnomers, and that his statement was so full of them, I don't even know where to start unpacking them. Zurich is a city with one of the highest per capita income in the world. I couldn't afford to live there. I only was able to stay there because I had subsidized university housing. People use the trains because it is what makes sense for the type of city they want. To get back to the point of Rochester, if we want a walkable, dense Rochester, the idea of having buildings with its own parking, with its own access to parking, is not possible. You can't have both. And so the trade-off that they made in a lot of European cities wasn't that they necessarily needed transit, but they realized that in order to have the type of environment, the type of city they wanted to, that was the only way they could get there. And that is the idea that mandates transit, that mandates biking in places like Amsterdam and Copenhagen. And it's really that fundamental realization that I think is going to change attitudes in the U.S. And we see it in places in the U.S. like Cambridge, like Portland, like Washington, D.C. All of those places have changed the culture and are beginning to reap the benefits of changing that culture.
But let me also ask Mike Governale and Howard Decker about Don's comment regarding the fact that right now, his current reality is a guy who spent $1 million and is trying to make something work and is constantly told, you don't have the parking. And so that impacts him as a property owner, as a possible business owner. And Mike, he's saying, this sounds like good stuff that the panel's talking about. And it also sounds like pie in the sky that is missing reality, especially in Rochester. What do you think, Mike?
I'm not sure who's telling him that, if it's his future, you know, potential tenants or if it's the city. It sounded like he was saying that the city was saying that he doesn't have enough parking, but I could be wrong. I know downtown doesn't have any parking minimums, so that's a great thing. Regionally, I think, is what we need to be talking about is getting not just the city of Rochester, but all of our surrounding towns, suburbs, and municipalities in alignment on how we develop all of our towns and city. Because travel patterns in Rochester are such where you have a lot of people coming in from downtown, living in the suburbs, and even vice versa. So a lot of people aren't making trips, you know, within the city of Rochester, but they're moving around the region. And it's very difficult to get around our suburbs without a car. There is a big market, I think, in Rochester and growing around the country for people who want to live a car-free lifestyle. So the market is there. You might have to look at different segments of people, empty nesters, young professionals, you know, people who maybe can't afford to own a car. That's another thing I wanted to touch on is the cost of owning a car. I think it's something like a third of our income in Rochester goes to owning and maintaining a vehicle. So that's a big percentage of our income going to car ownership. So I think that's one of the reasons why we need to, you know, make that long slog up the hill of, you know, converting our city into a more walkable, transit-friendly environment.
Howard Decker?
Well, and I think that's very true. But I want to come back to what Don said about his particular problem on the west side in the Cascade District. I know that neighborhood, and I know there's a lot of surface parking over there. And I suspect that his prospective tenants are telling him that they don't want to walk more than a couple hundred feet. So one of the things that we have to do is maybe expand our horizons in terms of how far we're willing to walk from our car to the front door. But more importantly, I also know that there's some big parking lots over there which are often empty. And I think it comes back to it suggests, again, the notion that we don't manage our parking in downtown terribly well. So if you have a redeveloped building like the one Don is referring to, and you have tenants who are looking for an opportunity to have parking close by, it suggests parking management, it suggests a circulator, it suggests other means by which to move from your place of business to your car. It doesn't necessarily mean that Don needs to ask Jim to build him a parking garage. I think what it means is that we need to begin to think differently about the relationship between where we park and where we work. I think that's a much simpler kind of question. And be willing to walk a couple hundred feet, it's probably pretty good for us.
And to be fair, it's sort of a chicken and the egg thing where we need to redevelop our streets so that we don't have all of these parking voids, which, you know, for a pedestrian, if you're walking through parts of downtown, it can feel very unsafe, uncomfortable, because there aren't a lot of buildings. There are no storefronts, that sort of thing. So, you know, where do we start?
Let's get to our one short break of the hour. We're going to come back with your phone calls as the phones light up on this subject. We're talking about transit and the future of multimodal transportation in Rochester. 844-295-TALK. If you want to jump in, 844-295-8255. Our guests for the hour include Norman Garrick on the line with us from the University of Connecticut, a professor of civil engineering, and someone who has also been a member of the National Board of the Congress for New Urbanism. He will be in Rochester June 3rd, next week, 7 to 9 p.m. at the Gleason Works Auditorium. Tickets still available for the Reshaping Rochester series with his presentation on a transit revolution. And by the way, if you haven't come out to these kind of events, it's not just engineers and planners. I mean, it's the Jim McIntosh types and Crystal Benjamin Baffords and many other folks. But it's really, it's meant to be a community conversation. And I think that's what you're seeing this hour. And tickets are available 7 to 9 at Gleason Works Auditorium June 3rd next week. If you want to come out, check out what Norman has to say and maybe think about how it could relate to our city. And our panel in studio, Crystal Benjamin Bafford, Director of Service Planning for RTS, Jim McIntosh is Rochester City Engineer, Howard Deckard is a Community Design Center of Rochester board member, and Mike Urbanale, President of Reconnect Rochester. Your phone calls next on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, does anyone make anything anymore? And for that matter, does anyone invent anything anymore? Well, let's talk about the second part of that question. When it comes to invention and intellectual property, Rochester and Western New York are stronger in this area than you might suspect. We dig inside some reporting with the help of the Democrat and Chronicle and look at the intellectual economy next hour on Connections.
Hello, I'm Ken Glazer, honorary co-chair for WXXI's Go Public campaign. Each day, I turn to WXXI for news programming that engages and challenges me. It's important that we keep local, independent journalism strong in Rochester. Please join me in support of the Go Public campaign. Make a gift online at wxxi.org/gopublic. And thank you for your support.
Welcome back to Connections, and this is John in Rochester. Go ahead, John.
Hey, Evan. Yeah, I've worked downtown since 1973 within the Inner Loop, and in 1988 I was part of the group that purchased a building about 55,000 square feet. We rehabbed it. And one of the key ingredients back then was to find a parcel with parking on site. We were able to make additional parking out of the lower level. And I'll tell you, as a landlord, this has been a great advantage for us because I can tell you, just for my own company within the building, people demand parking, and that's a problem. I think the problem, believe me, I love having the company downtown. I've had some pressures to move it outside downtown, but I want to remain here. But and things are getting better, no doubt about it. But I think that the bigger picture here in the United States, and I know we're talking about Zurich, Switzerland, and that type of thing, we've got, I think, 97% of the United States mainland is undeveloped. This presents a lot of competition to downtown areas where people want the convenience of parking right near where they shop or where they work. And gas prices are going down. Energy prices are going down. I would make the argument that we maybe need more suburban sprawl because we have different layouts and demands than Europe does. We're not Europe.
John, thanks for the phone call. I'm going to start with Howard Decker because, again, I saw once in a while Howard winces who does this thing in studio, and I always wonder what it means. Howard, go ahead.
We can't afford more sprawl.
Well, Howard, I'll give you an example. You mentioned tax rates. Tax rates in Henrietta and Victor are one of the lowest in New York State. The city of Rochester has the highest property tax rate, I think, if not the highest, one of the highest in the western New York at $55 a thousand. So suburban sprawl does work in Victor and Henrietta.
I suppose one could make that argument, but I think one could also make the argument that in the long run, we can't afford to continue to pay for the infrastructure on a duplication or triplication or quadruplication basis that allows us to have, that allows us to sprawl all over the countryside. And, I think that the fact that we look at communities, maybe not Henrietta and Victor, but communities around the region who are cutting services, fewer library hours, fewer firemen, fewer police officers. Maybe our town should merge with another town. This is all evidence of the fact that this question of sprawl has consequences which I don't think we really don't want to deal with.
Well, that could be attributed to the structural problems we have in the state and how the public unions, et cetera, have created the economic crisis of high taxation that's needed to supply these high public contracts, et cetera. I think that's what we have to attack versus attacking suburban sprawl.
Thanks for the call, John. Jim McIntosh, Rochester City Engineer, go ahead.
Sure. I guess the other piece is, you know, if you look at what's happening with, you know, we all like to look at millennials because we all realize that that's where, you know, things, you know, that's the city of the future. Millennials now are, you know, we talk about the car culture. I think it was 10 years ago, people under 25, somewhere in the neighborhood of 16% of them didn't have a driver's license. That number's up over 20%. It's probably like 25%. They're not getting cars right away. You know, they have college debt to pay off. They can't afford to take a third of their budget for a car. And I think the thought of all this, you know, walkability and bikeability and transit options is to address that need of millennials and also downtown housing to not have, you know, the two cars, you know, maybe get down to one or no cars. And I think that's one of the issues that we're trying to deal with as we deal with the issues of buildings and, you know, how do we keep, you know, things going today? What are we looking at going forward?
Okay. And Jeff has been waiting to jump in on exactly that point. It's a perfect time for it. Go ahead, Jeff.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Besides millennials, the other demographic that I haven't heard the panel discuss is the fact that, generically speaking, the country is getting older, not only in the Rochester area, obviously across the country, and that's going to ultimately mean fewer people driving. So I'd like to hear your panel discuss, besides the millennials, that demographic change that's happening as well.
Thanks for the call, Jeff. Yeah, Howard Decker. Go ahead, Howard.
Button, who's got the button? I think that one of the things that we are seeing is, and I'm sure Crystal can talk about it in terms of numbers and statistics, but as Jim says, we're driving less. This is statistically true. We're using transit more. This is statistically true. Amtrak ridership is up. Young people want increasingly not to own a car and not to spend time in cars, but to spend time doing things that are alternatives. And it's this wonderful kind of alliance between the older generation and the younger generation that can, in a way, begin to spark some real changes in how we think about transit. And the place where I would start, just to start to think about this a little bit, might be to really have Rochester and its region embrace the notion of complete streets. That is, that a street is not biased just towards cars, but bikes, pedestrians, all modes of transit, so that older people, younger people, every person can have access to movement and walkability and motion without necessarily being in fear for their life because the roadway is strictly dedicated to automobiles. But I'd be interested in hearing if Crystal is seeing their ridership impacted by, on the one hand, older, and on perhaps more importantly, on the other
millennials.
Hand, millennials.
Yeah. Crystal?
Well, we're facing all of the same changes in demographics that the whole transportation system is facing. And it's one of the things that those groups are the groups that we're focusing on. So we know here in Rochester, I like to say we're kind of baby stepping along. You know, I take the broad view because I'm a planner and I think long term. All around the country, you see cities redensifying their downtowns, revitalizing their downtowns, making them more walkable, and I know that it will happen here too. I think we're just at the beginning of that trend here where we see those two groups, the millennials and the older adults, wanting these things for their city. So what I see is it's a matter of time before we change our policies so that transit is more viable here. And in the meantime, we work towards those goals, making it easier for millennials to go from their homes and get to their work, making it easier for older adults to do the things that they want to do, which isn't necessarily work trips anymore, but we're talking about social trips, medical trips, all kinds of things that they do. So we are working on the system one step at a time. We did a major change just recently with the opening of the transit center, and then we're working through each piece of the system to make sure that it's meeting the needs of the two demographics that it needs to for the next generation.
Let me also just say, before the hour evaporates, I want to try to squeeze in one more web comment and at least one more phone call, because we have so much interest in this subject this hour. Tim writes to us from Pittsford, says, parking is abundant because of the lack of businesses. Employees of businesses do need a place to park. And he goes on to say, let me guess who is going to pay for this big transit revolution? Us bad guys in the suburbs who drive cars. I'm getting tired of this. So he's saying he feels vilified for driving a car and living in the suburbs.
Well, I think that the notion that Rochester or any other American city is going to suddenly see cars evaporate is nonsense. Of course, cars will not go away, even when fuel costs begin to rise again, which they will. Cars are not going to go away. So no one should feel, no car person should feel threatened. The car opportunities are huge as they sit today, and they're not going to diminish. What we are talking about is not doing away with the car, but instead providing other alternatives to the car, so that the car isn't the only way to move around our region. And I don't see that we necessarily need to do this at the expense of automobiles alone, though one does have a reasonable question about spending hundreds of millions of dollars on expressway interchanges when we know for a fact that what that's going to do, don't take it from me, take it from a transit engineer, that actually makes traffic worse, not better. But nonetheless, we're not here today talking about getting rid of automobiles. What we're talking about is trying to have some equity in transit options throughout our region. Right now, it's the car or nobody. And I think what we're looking for is a chance for other modes to have a place in the solar system of movement in Rochester, New York.
Renee has been waiting to jump in with a question.
Norman, go ahead.
Real briefly, go ahead, Norman.
Yeah, I just wanted to add that really the other thing that we're talking about is not just equity, but is really the character of your center city. And regardless of where you live in the region, I think it's crucially important to have a vibrant place that can attract jobs, that can attract life. And really, when we're talking about transit, we're talking about the type of center city that we have. If it's all about cars, you cannot have the type of center city that is going to need, the region is going to need to be competitive in the coming decades.
Renee from Reconnect Rochester and Rockville. We've got about 30 seconds. Renee was on this program recently. I know you wanted to jump in. Go ahead, Renee.
I did. I'd love to know what the best way to help shift the culture toward a less car-centric one, and I don't mean just in the city of Rochester, but Mike talked about the connecting the suburbs with the city. What's the best way to help shift toward a less car-centric culture?
Renee, it's a good question, and it sets me up to do two things. First of all, Mike, pretty soon on this program, and maybe Renee will be back on with us soon, we're going to talk about Rock Transit Day. What's the 20-second description of what Rock Transit Day is?
So on June 18th, it's a Thursday, we're asking all Rochesterians, especially those people, including myself, who typically drive, to give public transit a try. And we are giving away thousands of bus passes to anybody, any company or organization who would like to participate. And we have lots of fun activities going on that day as well.
Don't give it all away, because we'll bring you guys. I think we're going to have you on next week, and we're going to talk about that. Because when people think about actually doing it, it's one thing to talk about it in theory. It's another to say, we're going to do it even for one day. We're going to talk about that next week. Norman Garrick, about 30 seconds left with you before we see you next week. How about just a quick comment on Renee's question on changing the culture? Where do we start, Norman?
Well, I think you're at the right place. In Hartford, we saw a lot of changes because the current newspaper paid a lot of attention to land use and transportation and the interaction between the two. We have a public interest program similar to yours. I think those kinds of discussions and the type of discussion we're having today is really important for people to start to discuss what is important about the region, what is important about transportation, and what type of region we want. It's not going to be easy, but that's the discussion we need.
Norman Garrick is coming next week, June 3rd, 7 to 9 p.m. at Gleason Works Auditorium. Jump on the Community Design Center of Rochester's website or give them a call for tickets. Norman, we'll see you next week. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you very much.
Also, Crystal Benjamin Baffert, Jim McIntosh, Howard Decker, Mike Governale, representing RTS, the City of Rochester, the Community Design Center, and Reconnect Rochester. Thanks to a great panel. Thanks, everyone, for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you, Evan.
We never have enough time on this. I don't know why I don't just put 2 hours on this. And we'll see you soon when we talk about Rock Transit Day. Short break and more with you next on Connections.